out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 153. Yes, this is the 153rd edition here at the Caffeination. This is a Caffeination technically in absentia. We are not currently, as you may expect us, in the Caffeination headquarters at the in the wonderful city of Philadelphia. No, by the time you are listening to this, we are probably somewhere deep within Virginia Beach. I have probably begun the long drawn out process of relaxation. I've probably begun the slow descent into a much more relaxed state of mind. Work is far behind at this point in time. A little bit of self-hypnosis going on there. Just wanted to thank everybody out there for taking a chance and listening to this podcast. This is the Caffeination Podcast, located over at www.caffeination.com. If you'd like to send us comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, or whatever else you'd like to do, you can send that over to caffeination@gmail.com. And, of course, there's all the other ways you can get a hold of us. You can find most of them on the website, if not all. I have to check to make sure that that is the case. But still, you know, everything's pretty much on over at the website, caffeination.com. It's where we live, work, and play, you know, the whole nine yards. We just like to welcome everybody to today's show. This, of course, is August the 5th, 2007. We'd like to welcome all of the new and the returning listeners. All the new listeners, you are the lifeblood that keeps this this podcast running. You are what keeps us going. And all of the returning listeners, you are the people that have sustained us thus far, and we hope forward into the future. So we just, you know, like to extend our heartfelt and gratitude to everybody who has helped make this podcast what it is today. We'd also like to thank our sponsor. That would be GoToMeeting. If you're looking for a better way to present or work together during your conference calls, your solution is quite simple: web conferencing with GoToMeeting. During your call, everyone logs on to GoToMeeting.com, and your computer screen shows up on their monitors. It's like you're all in the same room. With GoToMeeting, it's perfect for sales or product demos, training, or real-time collaborations. Plus, you're not charged one of those per-minute fees like some of the other providers that are out there. You can meet as often as you want, for as long as you need, for one flat rate. With GoToMeeting, you can meet with anyone, anywhere, anytime, without ever having to leave your office. You'll not only end up saving a bucket of time, but a boatload of money as well. See for yourself, try GoToMeeting free for 45 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/podcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/podcast. We'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a sponsor here at the Caffeination for I think 7 or 8 months now. They've helped build all what you hear and see around you, so it's wonderful to have a working relationship with a company like that. And it really helps to have a steady bit of income coming in for the podcast. I mean, we do it for the love of the game, so to speak. You know, I do it basically because I really enjoy dispensing knowledge and hopefully entertaining you just a little bit throughout your day. But it also helps to be able to not be put into a hole by my hobby, you know what I mean? So, all right, well, first up, we have a little selection from the PodSafe Music Network. That's music.podshow.com. It's where I get to play DJ for just a very short section of today's show. Today we've selected an artist, Jimmy Bratcher, from over there, and his song Happy. So we hope you like it. It's kind of like a bluesy rock kind of vibe to it. So hopefully you'll enjoy it. Again, this is from the PodSafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. We have a song from Jimmy Bratcher called Happy. Any day now. And here we go. again. That was Jimmy Bratcher and his song Happy from the PodSafe Music Network. I don't know why, but we seem to have been gravitating towards some of the more instrumental music lately. That one, of course, being entirely instrumental. I don't know. I think I just... I really enjoy not having to worry about somebody's voice cracking in the middle of the song or something else like that. I enjoy just being able to revel in the music, and that was some real nice, good, hard-driving blues rock style stuff. So if you have any suggestions for the types of music you'd like to hear here at the Cafe Nation, you can please send all that stuff over to cafenation@gmail.com. And if you're listening to this on the stream over at the Tech Podcast Network, if it's tech, it's here, then you can find it at www.cafeination.com. We are going to get right on into the Tech Tidbits section for you here today. We have a very eclectic mix from not a lot of our usual sources. We decided to go outside our comfort zone to rock out on some of the more interesting news that I've been collecting for a little bit. Now, not necessarily the freshest news, let's just say. This isn't stuff that might be breaking headlines at any given point in time right now, but this is stuff I think you should know about, some of the more interesting and entertaining things that I've found recently. And some of them, like, it's kind of like a wiki surfing, which is something I talked a little bit about a while ago. I consider wiki surfing, it's where you start out just looking for an article on Wikipedia or something like that, and then you start clicking on the different links in there, and you started out looking at the Cold War, and then all of a sudden you find out you're looking at, like, frozen yogurt recipes. No connection between the two. You have to play, like, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon to find out exactly what went wrong with your particular search. You do know that you were looking at the Battle of Antietam, and that somehow the Battle of Antietam linked up to Stonewall Jackson, who, you know, enjoyed ice cream, possibly. Now, not saying any of this is true here, but, you know, you could see how it would eventually get down to some pretty strange and rather offbeat news sometimes. So every once in a while I'll find, like, a little nugget nestled deep within things, and every once in a while, you know, you're really losing it when the nuggets start to relate to one another. Like, something you found 1 week all of a sudden relates to something you find 3 weeks down the line, or even a year down the line. It just starts getting a little crazy, you know what I mean? Alright, well, first up here is something that you may have heard about, but this is called The Dead Can See. That's the title that they actually had for it. This is a story that's about an auction that was held over at 991.com. It's an auction for a very rare piece of Beatles memorabilia. This is for a pair of John Lennon sunglasses that were actually used during the Budokan tour in 1966. Apparently, the Beatles and John Lennon specifically developed a very close working relationship with their translator at the time when they were in Tokyo, and the gentleman's name, I just lost it. Oh boy. Yeah. I don't know. I just lost it. I'll probably find it a little bit later on. But, alright. The guy ended up, after becoming after he was a translator in 1966, and ended up eventually becoming the producer at Nippon TV, the Nippon TV network. So, he was actually sequestered with the Beatles, and as they were leaving, the Beatles decided, or the John Lennon's decided to exchange gifts with this gentleman, and it was unbelievable, what they decided to change. So he gave him his sunglasses, and the gentleman decided to give him a set of brass or copper cups. Sorry, and they were very meaningful. Meaningful gifts to each one of them. The glass in the actual sunglasses was silver. So in 1984, when the gentleman wrote this little note about the glasses, he gave you the provenience, he gave you all the different stories about it, and then he said when John died, he actually, as traditional Japanese custom dictated, he actually popped the lenses out of the glasses and had them with it, so that the dead can see. And it's just that little extra bit that I think gives this story something special. It's something interesting, and I thought it was awesome. And I haven't seen how much the glasses actually sold for, because This was done at the absolute height of the Beatles' popularity. This was done at the absolute apex of Beatlemania. It's when there was not a dry eye in the house. There was not a young girl who could be around them without screaming her head off. So it's a real interesting capsule of time to actually take a look at. And I just thought I'd pass it along to you. It's one of those fun little things you find out on the internet every once in a while. You're like, man, that's crazy. All right, now the second thing up here, I wanted to talk a little bit about Second Life. Now, there have been a bunch of stories recently. There was actually a Wired story about perverts in Second Life. We're not going into that. This is a family-friendly show. Come on. All right, but no, what I wanted to talk to you a little bit about was my views on Second Life. Now, I really haven't tried it beyond creating an account or something every once in a while. Just the one time I meant. But, I have endeavored that I'm going to create a free account. I'm actually going to give it a shot just because I want to see what it is that everybody's talking about. Now, the only thing is I'm not going to actually sink any money into this because I am convinced that the entire thing is nothing more than a hyperbolic hype machine. Everybody that I've ever heard talk about it, they're like, oh yeah, you know, every once in a while you see other people there. Like, okay, if you see other people, why are you dumping like literal crap loads of money into it? And when you look at the economy of Second Life, they said, well, real dollars spent, and it's always an order of magnitude larger than the actual Linden spent, which is the currency within the game. And, you know, okay, all this money is exchanging hands, all this money is funneling into Linden Labs. How much money is actually coming out? So most of the stuff is people spending real money to buy Linden. Then they spend their Linden in the game to give to other players for goods and services within the game. Or within the experience. I don't even think you could call it a game. So the money never comes out. It's never like you could have a store in there and then there's an easy way to pull this money back out. In fact, Linden Labs seems to have done everything they possibly can to make that an issue, make that hard to do. So it's just something that I really didn't think has a lot of legs. I think it's eventually going to fade out. I mean, it just seems to be a little bit too top-heavy for its own good, you know? All right, well, on to the actual news content for this. There's a wonderful guy that I've read his blog for years, and I've actually been subscribed to something he does called The Cryptogram for years. This is actually Bruce Schneier, and he's over at schneier.com, and you can subscribe to The Cryptogram. It's all the stuff that's fit to print in security, and, you know, just security is an overarching field, let's just put it. So it's not just security. It's also it's not just data security. I mean, it's also internet security. It's passport security. It's where you find all the crazy little fun hack attempts that people have done and failed or succeeded. All right, well, he ran a little background here. He ran a little bit of a contest a while ago that said what he wanted to do was create a movie plot where the person who wrote the plot had to pick ordinary everyday items that somebody would take on an airplane, and then, you know, something that when the airplane crashed because of whatever the terrorist in the movie did, that the FAA would be forced to ban something so inane, so innocuous, so absolutely commonplace that it would be ridiculous. Now, this is the second year in a row that he actually ran the contest, and he's gotten great submissions both years. Now, I'm not going to ruin it for you. You can actually head on over to schneier.com to actually see it, not to see the movie, that would be awesome, but to actually read the conversation that's there, and you can see the actual you can see the story, and it's very well written. That's why I don't want to really ruin it for you, but let's just put it this way: it's more common than common at this time that the item that they are forced to ban through the thing is something that you wouldn't even be able to think of just in listening to this. But that's not what I came to talk to you about today. I came to talk to you about Second Life, right? Well, apparently somebody's taken this whole movie plot idea and it kind of pasted it onto Second Life, because now apparently Second Life is being used to recruit terrorists. Yes, that old standby, the internet is evil because it's used to recruit terrorists. Yeah, I'm sure that everybody over there in Iraq and Afghanistan and everything like that, I'm sure that, you know, besides fighting for their lives and besides, you know, hunting from cave to cave to you know, escape detection. I'm pretty sure they all have T1 lines drilled right through the side of the mountain, and they're all sitting in there, you know, playing Second Life together. So they're saying, you know, they're trying to disseminate, you know, propaganda materials. They're trying to join. There are, at this point in time, 3 jihadi terrorists registered and 2 elite jihadist terrorist groups. Okay, now if you know these things are in Second Life, you just monitor them. Chances are the people they snag are not going to be, you know, very dedicated soldiers. They're going to be like a 15-year-old who's disgruntled and his parents told him not to go there. So, completely crazy. I just one of those things you have to check out. Schneier actually put it on his blog, so you can head on over there, schneier.com/blog, to actually see the end and the full width and breadth of it. Now, the next little thing that they have on that I found on Second Life, it says, don't think it'll be too much of a problem. Apparently, you know, I was referring to the terrorist story. I don't really think they're going to be able to find that many people, because apparently, It's all full of, Second Life is full of avatars. They're full of people who don't actually do anything in Second Life. And the marketing hype machine around it has allowed companies such as Coca-Cola, IBM, Dell, everybody setting up these in-game, or in-world stores. They're spending crazy amounts of money to do so, but they're being sort of lied to. They're not necessarily being lied to, but they're not actually being told the truth about the population of Second Life. Second Life, Linden Labs, is quite fond of saying, oh, we have over 8 million registered users. Okay, well, how many logged in the past month? They say, okay, well, that's down to 1.3. How many of them are duplicate users? You know, basically meaning one person who has 3 or 4 different accounts. Oh, we can't tell you that. Okay, fine. And then they go on. This is actually an interview over at Wired, and it's really unbelievable. It's a great read if you really want to check it out. It basically says that, you know, most people, when you're in Second Life, you interact with avatars. You interact with the husk, the cicada shell of somebody who's actually, you know, on the outside. So after you leave, they say your avatar just basically floats around. And he goes on to talk about all the different corporations and everything that have set up you know, stores in there, and they're all empty. All the time. There's points of presence for the Coke, NBA, YouTube, MySpace, different social networking, user-generated content. I know Tech Podcasts even has something. I haven't actually been to their little venue, but it's probably something I should check out at some point in time. But still, they're saying that they're almost always empty. So I don't know where the mass of people are going, but maybe the world's too vast. Maybe there's other things happening that people don't feel like going in and, you know, being forced to view an ad because you're in a giant store that resembles one. So it's just one of those things to kind of check out. I would heartily recommend this article. It is 3 pages chock full. I mean, like, absolutely top to bottom stuffed with information about Second Life, with the stuff that's going on with the advertising for it. And it's basically saying that, you know, there are certain different areas, like you can buy an island for a crazy amount of money, and it's official currency, it's given away for free, and so it's just kind of fun to actually read all the ins and outs. I mean, from a completely impure marketing point of view, it's fun to actually check out. All right, well, moving right along, it says Marked for Life is how I have it listed over there. There's very few things in life that I would actually feel so compelled about, you know, so positive about, that I would actually tattoo it on my body. I have one tattoo. It's a symbol which basically means honor and courage. Two things that are very near and dear to me. Principles that I basically try and live by. But some people tattoo very strange things on them. There's an entire culture surrounding tattoos that, you know, depending on the placement of it, they mean certain things. Depending on the symbol you pick, it means certain things. And I tried, but I couldn't find. There's actually a website where this guy runs a service for the army. Basically, he will allow people to send in their Asian character tattoos, and he will tell them what they really mean. Now, I have a couple friends who have these tattoos. I personally don't. One of my friends had this giant one right on his forearm, and when he got it, he says, "Yeah, man, this means like guitar player or guitarist." And when he was in Chinatown one day in Philadelphia, somebody looked at it and started to chuckle, and he said, "What?" He said, "This means guitarist, right?" And he goes, "No, that means guitar string." Oh. Or there's there was one very famous one on the guy's website where it was supposed to be man who was it was supposed to be a an inner strength kind of thing for a man, and it actually like a compatriot loyalty to it, to his fellow soldiers, and it actually translated roughly as man who loves other men. And it's one of those things, man, if you could hit wider the mark, if you could be more offensive to, not that there's anything wrong with that, but if you could be more offensive to a person's sensibilities when they're focused on an incredibly masculine endeavor than to do that, I mean, that's just awesome. I'm pretty sure the guy went back to the tattoo parlor and started whipping up on somebody real good. But all right, now here's some of the tattoos that I basically found. This is the impetus for this tract. Apparently some guy, I have no clue why, decided that he wanted to tattoo the horrible and dreaded BSOD on his arm. Yes, the blue screen of death, not blue in this case, but he tattooed the text that's on there, the kernel panic for limit, the fatal exception error, and it's on the entire length from his shoulder on the underside of his arm to halfway down his forearm. This is nasty. I mean, we're talking, the only way you can read this, I mean, it just seems to be so stupid. The only way you can read this is if he has his arm extended out and he doesn't have a shirt on. I mean, I'm hoping it's a Photoshop job at this point. It looks red enough to actually be a real one, so I'm pretty sure it is. But I don't know what would possibly possess this guy, unless he's some crazy Windows programmer who's managed to eliminate the blue screen of death in the next version of Windows. There's no reason he should have anything like this. And I'm a fan of tattoos. I enjoy them. I like seeing a good, well-designed tattoo, even if it's pure text. If it just looks good, if it looks like it was meant to be there, then that's cool. But this just kind of looks like it was slapped on. I mean, I don't know what other tattoos the guy has. It doesn't appear to be any other ones in the picture, but no word about who this fun guy is. I mean, he's not the idiot who had the Zune stuff tattooed to him. I didn't even put that up there. But we're going to move on to some of the more fun ones. Now, here's a little bit of an aside here. I don't know if you knew this, but there was a point in time, and there probably still is certain ones, but that cryptography, basically the program that you use to encrypt any text, file, whatever else like that, was actually considered munitions by the United States. So it was illegal to travel with hard copies of this. You could not take this outside the United States. You could not produce software and give it to people outside the United States that have certain levels of cryptography in them, which at certain areas is when you really get down to it, it's like, okay, so by limiting this particular piece of technology to just within the United States, no one can test it outside the United States, and if it gets outside the United States, we're not going to be able to deal with an outside threat from it. That's going to be fabulous. Just walled gardens don't ever seem to be an intelligent idea for a technology sector, but there is a specific and interesting line of code. It's actually three lines of Perl, incredibly obfuscated, incredibly compact, that actually export a crypto system signature. So it's there's even a two-line version, which is just crazy in and of itself, but so it's basically how you generate RSA keys, how you generate encryption keys to encrypt text and everything else like that. And so I have linked up a link to the website where you can actually head out and check that out. But the funny thing is that they list on the website is actually people who have, first of all, they made a t-shirt of it, of course, and then the t-shirt, basically you couldn't go near an airport, and then there's people who've actually had it tattooed on their body. So it invalidates this human for travel, basically. And the fun one was actually, pardon me, the fun one was actually done by Jay Dyson. I like this because there's extra commentary on either side of it. Apparently it was done like right over his heart. It says, warning, this human is classified as munitions. US ITAR, FAR regulations, RSA, and three lines of Perl. Then it gives the three lines of Perl. Then it gives, under that, it says, federal law prohibits transfer of this man to foreigners. So I guess that classified anybody who attempted to take him somewhere he didn't want to as an enemy combatant in the War on Terror. And he was pretty much untouchable, according to the munitions laws. So there's a whole list of stuff if you'd like to familiarize yourself with the export crypto. There's actually a link to a letter you can send to the president. And apparently it's no longer that particular line of code, that particular section of code is no longer considered munitions, at least some of the... Some of the codes that they list are. So it's really fun to actually read up on that. Now, the next one that I actually have linked up here is actually much more benign, but it's seriously obfuscated C code. Now, there is actually a contest for obfuscated C code. It's basically very simple code that does something very simple, very innocuous, which could be done in a much more legible fashion. But they want you to make the most complicated and convoluted statement to create this. So this guy has this crazy station, this crazy statement, which is almost unbelievably... I don't even know. It's almost unbelievably complex, but when you really get down to it, all it does is print "Hello World" on the screen. It's two lines of very incredibly obfuscated C code, and he had it tattooed on his forearm. Then he has a second tattoo of a encryption string, which basically mean it's like Brendan, or it's his name and his wife's name forever, which wrap around and mix with this code, which is, yeah, that's cool and everything. And then then you go on to the new kid on the block. Yes, of course, the gentleman, if you are familiar, we actually talked a little bit about the AA, let me just make sure I'm getting the acronyms right this time, AACS tag. It was determined that all you needed to do was to say this one series of numbers, or not say, but use this one series of numbers as an encryption key to decrypt any DVD that had copy protection on it. Or any HD DVD, sorry, I think, that had copy protection on it. And there was a whole big blow-up on Dig where people were posting the string and then they were getting banned and then the stories were getting withdrawn, and then so people, like, it blew up, and then people who didn't even know what they were doing actually started posting the string, and then it turned into this whole internet meme in like 2 days. It was crazy. People basically crippled Dig during that period of time. I mean, and it basically showed the creators of Dig that maybe they created something just a little bit too powerful. So this guy has that tattooed right over his heart. And I mean, the string itself at this point is worthless. There is nothing you can do. I can't even read what... I mean, it is a real tattoo, and it is 09F91107F E35B484156C56356888C0. That's subject, of course, to a takedown notice by the AACS, but still, that's what he has tattooed right across his heart in two lines. That's nice and fun. Then we move on to the craziness that is Peter Moore. Yes, the man who headed the Xbox division since the inception of since I think actually about 5 years ago now at this point. He actually had the release date for Halo 2 tattooed on his right arm. Yes, the symbol for Halo 2 and then November 9 tattooed right above it. And then, oh, he wasn't even done there. No, just this year, he actually tattooed Grand Theft Auto 4 IV on his arm to announce that that would be released on October 16th in the US. And you gotta love a man who is so into your company, who is so evangelical about your product, that he's willing to get ink for your company. And he actually kind of put it out there to Sony and said, "Look, I'm willing to see whatever you guys have." Nobody at Sony so far has gotten a tattoo of anything, except maybe somebody's boot in the rear end for taking too long to get to market. But still, just one of those things. I thought it was awesome. I mean, and then the funny thing is, after he goes and gets the Grand Theft Auto tattoo, he ends up leaving Microsoft for an absolute buttload of cash to go to EA. And you know what? If he's going to go to EA, And he's going to bring, you know, this, I will take ink for the company. I believe in your product so much. You know, you got to think that EA is going to do nothing but go up from where they are right now. So, you know, more power to him. I mean, that's taking a whole crazy, that's taking something to a whole crazy level. And speaking of crazy level, we have two more little tattoos. We have two more little tattoo mentions, and then we are off and running with the rest of the episode here today. I just got to get that. There we go. Nice and start up with the music. All right. It's a little fun trying to play with all these different programs and everything that are running in the background. Sometimes I get my mouth running and forget to have the music doing the same thing. So, all right. Well, the next thing we have up here is an absolute metric ton of geek tattoos. Now, some of them are as crazy and convoluted as an entire alien invasion across the back of the dude's bald head and back. Others are a girl has on her lower back the Apple logo with Think Different. You have the Heavenly Sword guy. You got the Halo person on somebody has the Triforce with Link. Somebody else has Simon the same person actually has Simon Belmont on her leg. My favorite one, and this is just crazy and awesome at the same point in time, a guy across his back has HTML tags. Up at the top in where the Atlas bone is, it says HTML body. On the left shoulder, it says P align left. On the right shoulder, P align right. Then he has a line center in the middle. Then end of div, end of body, end of HTML in his lower back. Then, of course, there's the ever-present gun tattoos going into the belt. You have some really cool Mario tattoos. Some girl has a fire flower coming out of the rear end. There's the Tanuki. Now, this one's absolutely ridiculous. But on the guy's neck, right behind and to the left on it's actually his left ear, behind and down to on his left ear, he has the Tanuki suit Mario running. I mean, just crazy stuff all the way down. There's actually a picture of somebody's rear end, I think, that has the a Pac-Man maze tattooed. Somebody has Quake, Space Invaders, Star Wars. I mean, you really need to head on over there and check it out. I'm not going to sit here and read what every single tattoo is, but I mean, it's just, I'm like I said, I'm a fan of tattoos that show very good artistry, and there are some gorgeous ones up there, and then there are some ones where you're wondering what the heck they paid for. But, you know, and then finally the last one is they were actually running a contest, I think, over at modblog.com, but a girl actually has the Konami code tattooed on her stomach. So right below her belly button, it actually has a Game Boy, and then up, up, down, down, left, right, A, B, start. Kind of neat, kind of cool, but the problem with it is, I mean, this is all well and good, but if she ever gets pregnant, this is going to turn from the Konami code into some kind of mutation, because the stretching of the skin. I mean, that's probably one of the worst places for a girl to get a tattoo. Second of all, it's badly done. The only thing I can hope is that somebody drew this on with marker, you know, but just crazy. So that's about the last thing. And then, of course, there's the link. If you're going to have the Konami code there, then there's the link to the awesome Dueling Analogs cartoon where it shows a picture incredibly incredibly sacrilegious here, but it shows a faux Last Supper, which is actually the disciples and everything sitting at a table with Contra on a TV on the one end. And if you look closely at the hands of the people sitting at the table, it goes up, up, down, down, left, right, A, B, select, start. It doesn't get much better than that. So, I mean, I really hope they actually make a poster of this. And the only thing I would actually change would be to take the actual video game console out of it, because otherwise it is absolutely perfectly instituted and perfectly implemented poignant message. So, and just one of those little fun things that we found. But, all right, moving right along, no more tattoo news for today. Like I said, I've been collecting them for so long that I had to just share them with everybody. All right, and another article that I found rather recently is an article from the New Yorker. It's called Damn Spam, but apparently there was a time during ARPANET and the beginnings of the internet, back before the tubes were tubes, they were just a single one, that where there was no spam, there was email without unsolicited email. Imagine that. The year was 1978. A fun little company called DEC, we've actually talked about them on previous podcasts, was operating out of operating out of an old wooden mill in Maynard, Massachusetts. And apparently the lead gentleman over there in charge of sales was trying to get the company to expand beyond its East Coast power base. So he wanted to talk to people in California. Now, back at that point in time, everybody who was connected to the network, known then as ARPANET, actually had their name in one directory. Crazy. You would never think of doing that now. So the gentleman's name was actually Thurick, Gary Thurick. He collected a series of 600 email addresses and sent off a message basically saying, we invite you to come see the 2020 and hear how about the DEC Systems 20 family. And so as historic line go, basically it says, didn't have quite the ring of one small step for man. He got like death threats as opposed to this. I mean, people were basically saying, you know, this violates terms of service. This, this is a completely unauthorized use of the network. How dare you, sir? I mean, everything, the length and breadth, he ran the gamut with reactions. And, of course, the ever-present Robert Stallman, the crazy hermit of the internet, says, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Unfortunately, the only problem is that we've reached the slippery slope here. So we went from that one tiny email to 600 people to, I think there was something like 95% of the traffic on the email port in a given day is spam, if even that low. They said somewhere between 95 and 99% of the mail everyone receives is spam. So imagine the amount of traffic that takes up, and it all started from that one email. So you really need to head on over there and read this article. It's a fun little read. It's a jaunt through history at certain points in time. It actually talks a little bit about the author's email inbox habits and all the fun little help he's gotten for the dating services, dating adult friend line, adult friend finder, and he's had email from such people as Antonia, Heather, Helen, Joyce, Olivia, Kelly, Sally, Sophie, Sue, among dozens of others. So he must be a very popular person, but I know we get some rather strange stuff here at the Caffeination, so just thought that was awesome, and never really thought about the origin of spam. I just kind of naturally assumed that if there was email, there was people trying to send you it, and you really didn't want it. Now, the next little thing we have up here is actually a fun video breakdown. We're not going to play the videos for obvious reasons on the podcast, because, well, I can play them and watch them to my heart's content over here, but you're not going to see very much. So I'm going to give you a little explanation on the first two things. If you've ever heard or seen the video for Michael Jackson's Thriller, it's a very distinctive dance. There's a very there's certain qualities about it that stand out and make it an excellent example of early music videos. Well, they took that, they meaning a prison in the Philippines, this is a very popular video right now on YouTube, they took that and turned it into a choreographed dance for the prisoners as exercise in the prison yard. So you really need to check that out. I mean, they actually have, you know, a guy and a girl, same thing as in the video, walking across the center of the screen. The only thing I ask you to do is when you actually check it out, you need to take a very close look at the quote-unquote girl walking through the hundreds of male prisoners. Yes, you guessed it. It's a guy prisoner dressed up as a girl. And the dancing is a little bit to be desired, but then again, these are doing 20 to life kind of things. And then the next thing that we have here, again, another Thriller derivative, but it's actually it's an Indian version of Thriller. It's strange. I mean, if you've ever watched Bollywood movies, they have a certain quality about them. There's always echoing when they sing, and there's a whole couple other things that are like primary signatures for a standard Bollywood film, and they're all present in this. It's jarring to see what you understand as the original Thriller video, and then a completely and utterly different version when you have an Indian take on it. So I wanted to play just a little bit of that for you, so you can hear that. All right, and here's the. Let me see if I can actually. Unfortunately, I have to actually preload the video just a little bit, so you'll hear the thing. But this is a sample of what it sounds like. Nepali mantra mitte yem avtavo.
కంగారు పడ్డ కన్న శృంగారమా, వణుకుల్లో కూడా ఎంత వయ్యారమా గులిమార.
Alright, so that's about all I'm going to play for that. The funny thing about the video isn't necessarily the singing, because the singing is relatively good by Bollywood standards, and I don't understand the language at all, but you know, it has a good musicality to it, and you understand what the guy's trying to say, basically. But the funny thing is, the video itself is incredibly manic. I mean, the guy who is... it's like a cross between Thriller and Riverdance. I mean, there's nothing else to describe, and it's not... like a lot of the Bollywood movies I've seen. I actually took a class in Bollywood films in college, but it's not like a lot of them. It's the movements are a lot more jerky in this one, a lot less coordinated. So I don't know what this was done for, but it's one of those things you're like, oh my God. All right. Now the next little thing we have up here is actually a video called The Algorithm March. It's a series of dance moves. Basically, you have a single file group of people, and as they walk forward, they do a series of prescribed motions. And it's a Japanese concept. It's a concept that was come up with for a series of Japanese kids cartoons by a comedy troupe in Japan. And they're very catchy. The way that they sing and the way that they talk about it is very catchy, specifically even if you don't understand what the heck they're saying. But watching it is pretty cool. And so the first thing I have up there is it's called The Algorithm March with Ninjas. So it's basically the two gentlemen who actually created the march itself. And then this is a little sample of what that sounds like, so you can understand what I'm talking about. It's called the Pythagoras switch.
Algorithm Kōsin! Algorithm Kōsin! Ninja no miyasan to issho!
And here's the algorithm march. All right, we're just gonna fade out right there. It's a very similar and very repetitious song, but it's really neat, the choreography with it, because you know, like for instance, one person will bend down and pretend to swim while the person behind them pretends to swim forward, and you don't actually see that. When you first see, like, they have in the video that I have linked up there, they do the individual march first. So you have just some guy walking across the stage acting like a tool. And then the second one, you're like, oh, so when he leans back and puts his hands on his hips, the guy behind him at that same point in time bends down and sticks his hands forward, and the hands go through the holes that made by the guy's arms who put his hands on the hip. And when the guy leans back to do that, the guy in front of him is actually bending over, you know, like bowing to him. So it's a very interesting and very convoluted dance step. But the fun thing is, yes, those same prisoners, apparently the prisons in the Philippines don't seem anywhere near as nasty and horrid as the prisons here in the United States or any of the other ones I've heard of. They decided to set a Guinness Book of World Records, and they have, let me see if I get the number right, actually... All right. They had 967 inmates all doing the algorithm march. Now, this is from the Cebu Provincial Detention and Rehabilitation Center, the CPDRC in Cebu, Philippines. So this is the same group that did the Thriller. They also have Radio Gaga, Jumbo Hot Dog, whatever that is. In the Navy, Sister Act, Hail Holy Queen, Black Eyed Peas. I mean, apparently they have a lot of fun in the prisons in the Philippines, so if I ever go there, I've got to make sure to get arrested for at least a minor crime, you know, just enough for the talent show. But just thought I'd pass those little video links along there. I hope you really have enough time to head on over to caffeination.com and check them out, because it's one of those things where you really have to actually see them to believe them, because there is no... I mean, I can explain them, and you can hear the fun little noises all you want, but once you see them, it's they're really a hoot. All right, well, that about wraps up for the tech tidbits section. There's just one little thing in the caffeinated bits. Well, two tiny little things. The first up is actually a link from over at Hackaday, and it's actually an automatic French press. So two episodes ago in Caffeination 151, we talked about what a French press was. Basically, it's a series of coarse grind of coffee, and instead of the water being heated up and percolated through it, it's actually pressed forcibly through the filter so it actually soaks up a little bit more. Now, one of the detractors of the French press, besides the labor labor-intensive way of creating the coffee. It is the fact that you get a lot more of the bad cholesterol in it. Apparently, when you use paper filters or metal filters, and paper filters versus metal filters, you have different levels of cholesterol that get through. It goes back and forth. It's kind of like unfortunately, it's kind of like cancer, whether or not coffee is good for you. You know, everything causes cancer, so coffee is both a blessing and a curse at any one point in time. So I've determined that I'm just going to drink whatever I feel like drinking coffee-wise, and then, you know. But basically, this is a way to create an automatic French press coffee brewer. I believe it starts out with whole beans and seriously... really drops it down, grinds it to the correct specifications using a blade grinder, not a burr grinder, which is not, you know, the best, I guess. But, yeah, if you want to get really hoity-toity about it. But it grinds it, presses it, pours it, and the whole nine yards. I'd like to actually see a cupping of this. I'd like to actually see somebody sit down and work the whole thing out. But, yeah, it's really impressive to actually take that level of automation. And then the last little thing that we wanted to talk to you about, something that's actually going to be explained a little bit more later on, but we actually had two people ask us about decaffeinated coffee. Now, this is not something we like to talk about here at the Caffeination, because we're all about caffeine, so not the lack thereof, but it could be a medical reason. You could like caffeine, but you're just not allowed to have it, so we're going to let you pass on that one. We're not even going to name names here, but they said they were recently shopping for coffee, and they saw several different methods of decaffeinating coffee, and they said, it's just decaffeinated, so there should be no caffeine, right? No. The problem with that is that there is caffeine in decaffeinated coffee, and the taste is actually directly affected. The taste of the coffee is directly affected by how the coffee was decaffeinated. The safest and most natural way to decaffeinate coffee is actually the Swiss water method. So what they do is basically steam the beans, brewing them ever so slightly. It's usually done with dark roasted beans. They brew it ever so slightly to seep the first initial hit of caffeine right out of the coffee beans. So then the beans that you're left have a significantly less amount of caffeine. They're also slightly weaker. They don't like to tell you that. Then the second way is actually through a chemical process, which uses chemicals somewhere along the lines of formaldehyde. Soak it in there, extract the caffeine, then it's rinsed off very quickly. And basically, they say there is absolutely no chance of this residue. But I just don't like getting preserved with my coffee. You know what I mean? So we're going to talk a little bit about more that again later on. But I just wanted to kind of give it out there for you. So if you see something that says Swiss water method of getting decaf coffee, that's what it is, and then the other methods are a little bit more obtuse, but Swiss water is the one that's the most natural, which is what I believe you were actually asking me. And if you want naturally decaffeinated, naturally caffeine-free, they're actually working on a coffee that does not have caffeine. I know, horror, perish the thought and everything, but again, speaking directly to the people who listen to the show who may not be able to stomach the caffeine for medical reasons, of course, we'd just like to put that out there as an option. They are trying to create a full-flavored coffee bean capable of being roasted at any temperature and or roast, and still retain all of its flavor but have no caffeine. So if they succeed, they just better not put it in my damn pot. That's all I'm going to say. Alright, this has been the Caffeination episode number 153. Derivative works because we kind of went all the way through, kind of wiki surfed our way through this episode, so I hope you enjoyed it. This has been the Caffeination Podcast number 153, located lovingly nestled over at www.caffeination.com. That's caffeination.com. If you'd like to send us comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, whatever else you'd like to throw my general direction, you can do that to caffeination@gmail.com. And if you'd like to leave us a voicemail, comment, feedback, suggestion, whatever else you'd like to on there, that's 215-240-1319. And then finally, last but certainly not least, you can head on over to myspace.com/caffeination and leave us a comment, feedback, suggestion over there. Alright, Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. We're also proudly listed over at blueberry.com. It's a social podcasting network site, kind of like MySpace for podcasts. We already gave you the link to MySpace, so we'd just like to thank everybody for listening to today's show, and expect more later on in the week. Thanks for listening, people, and stay caffeinated.